his palatial Los Angeles estates. He just got back from his My Little Pony collector's meeting, and some jackass traded him a chumster for two Princess Tiffany's. It's time to speak some English with Andrew English.
I don't care what anybody says. Chumster is way cooler than Princess Tiffany. Fuck that bitch.
Chumster is an actual My Little Pony figurine. It appears to be some, like, yellow dragon thing with a either a crown or an inflated surgical glove on its head.
I kind of feel like like I'm a little bit lacking here. My Little Pony knowledge is woefully short.
I would say that mine is nothing better than lousy.
I just Google imaged My Little Pony and I found an Edward Scissor pony, which is pretty awesome. But I don't think it's official. I think that I would get booed out of the convention if I showed up with one of those.
You should look up Chumster.
Is it just Chumster?
That's correct. They rarely even use their individual. Oh, he's in the movie, apparently.
Whoa, I found Chumster. Whoa, Chumster's not even a pony.
Of a motorcycle.
Yeah.
And some ponies. Is Chumster that little yellow thing?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, Chumster's pretty awesome, I'm not going to lie. He looks a little bit like Snarf.
Yeah.
Well, now that we've gotten that out of the way, let's try to move into something relevant. Welcome, as always, Wes and Carl. Got plenty of exciting conference semifinal action to talk about in the NHL today. So let's dive right into all the exciting happenings.
Right, and it is exciting and happening.
It's really kind of amazing what's been going on right now. I mean, the fact that we're looking at – I know we're only two games into most of these series right now, but the fact that every one of the series is tied up with the exception of the Caps-Penguins, which are – I think they're playing as we speak, as a matter of fact.
And it is literally tied up. Washington just scored to make it 1-1.
Well, there you have it. I have to say, obviously you alerted me the other day to the amazing save by Semyon Varlamov. And I was kind of given Semyon Varlamov. In fact, I didn't even know his first name the last time we spoke, but he's made damn sure that I'm not going to forget now. Right now, he is writing a .95 save percentage throughout the playoffs. And I think he has something like a 1.7 goals against average. I'm sorry, 1.29 goals against average with two shutouts. He has been absolutely freaking outstanding.
Yeah.
Where did this dude come from? Was he like...
I'm going to add one more outstanding thing to his list of accomplishments. As of tonight, he has played more games in the Stanley Cup Finals than he has played in the regular season.
That's
fantastic.
Tonight is his seventh game of NHL playoff action, which exceeds his six games of NHL regular season action.
They're my new favorite. I'm going to be rooting for him every game all the way through. That's
and he's
awesome.
Named
That's
Simi.
Incredible.
He's the monkey man.
How old
know?
Is he?
He's 21. He just turned 21 a couple of days ago, actually, on April 27th. This kid is clearly got a bright future out of him. I mean, looking at his regular season stats, admittedly, he only played six games, but he won four with one overtime loss, 2.37 goals against average. I mean, that's pretty solid stuff, but I don't think anybody could have predicted that he'd have the kind of series that he's had. And to pull Washington back from the brink, I mean, they were 3-1 down against the Rangers. And now, I mean, they're looking like serious contenders at this point on the back of him, and obviously, you know, Alex Ovechkin might have something to do with that.
I mean, it's funny that the coaching staff in Washington must have known something, because I mean, as admittedly, Theodore was wretched in Game One against New York and cost them that game, but the fact that they only gave him a game before they went to this kid says, I mean, it says a lot for his makeup that the coach was like, you know, I got one bad game out of my starter. I'm going to go to the guy that's played six games. And
yeah, no, that's clearly they've got a lot of faith in him, and clearly it's been well placed. It's kind of phenomenal to see a kid
who was
at that
the
age.
Second goalie through the majority of the season.
Yeah,
who
yeah,
won?
He did.
So who was
Theodore?
Theodore.
No, but I mean, so that he was Theodore's main backup. Theodore just played that many games.
No, they rotated his the primary backup was, God, I want to say it was Brent Johnson.
Okay, that's
old
what I was
St.
wondering.
Louis
the primary
starter.
Backup, yeah. Because I was wondering where he is now. Is he just gone? They
he's
gave
hurt.
Up on him? Okay.
Yeah, he ended up getting hurt, which is part of why they turned to Varlamov.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah. And then, you know, other storylines from the series is, you know, Varlamov admittedly getting the New York Rangers in the first round was a little bit nice, considering mm-hmm. that the Rangers are just marginally better on offense than my rec team.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely lucked out there, but you got to say, I mean, he comes into the second round series, and this is a huge matchup for the Caps. And the fact that he was able to hold the Pens to two goals in the first game clearly seems like he's doing an all right job tonight. How do you see this series shaping up? I mean, Fleury's always been a little bit hit or miss, and that's certainly proven to be the case so far in the playoffs. Do you think that Washington has a really legit shot to beat the Pens here?
Yes, they have a legitimate shot. I don't think they will. They lost tonight John Erskine, who's played some big minutes, and as anybody that's watched the Dallas Stars over the year, when losing, I mean, John Erskine has evolved into a very good player, but when losing him is considered a fairly crushing blow. I feel like the Caps are a year away. They're just a little bit, I mean, they're never going to be a solid defensive team. They're always going to be built around offense, and with, you know, Backstrom and Semin and obviously Ovechkin and Mike Green emerging. And I just feel like they're a little bit too flawed. They're relying on guys like Tom Pody and Milan Yurchina and until he went out, John Erskine, and they've all responded very well. But it's just, this is one of those series where, as well as Varlamov is playing, and as much as I continue to have faith in him, we're talking about a Pittsburgh team that's really kind of come into its own. They fought off a pretty good Philly squad. They were in the Stanley Cup Finals last year. I think it's going to be close, but you know, when I lay everything out on the table, I just feel like Pittsburgh is they're just a little bit better. They're just, you know, I think that they're a season ahead of where Washington is.
I think that makes perfect sense. I mean, obviously it helps that they have two amazing offensive players in Crosby and Malkin, but you're right, just looking through the list of Washington defenders here, they're relying on Carl Alzner and Brian Helmer. I mean, these are kind of no-name folks right here. Mike Green obviously has been stellar for them all year, but he's not a defensive defender by any stretch of the imagination. So I've got to believe that there's gonna be some cracks that are starting to show in their facade. But right now, Varlamov seems to be really getting the job done. It'll be interesting to see if he can keep this sort of form up. I mean, you've seen guys like this come out of nowhere and go on incredible runs in the playoffs before, but at 21 years old, with as little experience as he has, to see him maintain that for very long, I can't believe it's going to happen.
Yeah, and that's really, I think, what it comes down to. It's nothing concrete. It's just to believe that Pittsburgh is going to get beat, it's to believe that a 21-year-old is going to see off a Malkin / Crosby-led offense. And, you know, I want to, and I certainly hope they win. Frankly, I'm kind of sick of – I think Sidney Crosby is a whiny little baby, and it makes me sad that he's as good as he is and is as – carries himself as negatively on the ice as he does. But I feel like at the end of the day, Pittsburgh is just that Stanley Cup experience. They I think that the Guerin acquisition was a very, very good one. I feel like Jordan Staal is I put more faith in Jordan Staal slowing down Alex Ovechkin than I put in the likes of, you know, Brooks Like and Matt Bradley doing the same to Sidney Crosby.
Fair enough.
Jumping
on over in the East.
Jump, man.
Well, you know, we had a pretty short conversation really last time about the Carolina Jersey series, not really knowing where that was going to go. Ultimately, Carolina wound up winning it on Eric Staal goal.
Two goals in the final 90 seconds of a game against Martin Brodeur.
Pretty freaking incredible. And watching Brodeur's reaction to that, I feel like this is, I feel like that's kind of the end of Brodeur's time on top. I mean, I don't see that the Brodeur of old, you know, of even a couple of years ago would have allowed both of those goals. And he knew
that's weird. It's a weird little feeling you get. Like, I remember, obviously, you and I grew up, we were weaned on the, you know, no goal hockey of the late 90s.
Right.
And I remember when they played the Stars in the finals, and I remember if New Jersey scored once, you were terrified.
Yep.
Because it was just like, all right, and it was, he had that aura about him. And for whatever reason, for the last couple of years, he's been, he's still excellent. I mean, he's still very much an elite goaltender, but he doesn't scare me. If I'm a player, you know, he's a very good goalie, and you certainly go in knowing that you're going to have to give him your best. But, you know, I'm much more concerned looking at, you know, look at what Henrik Lundqvist did with the New York Rangers squad. He took, you know, a very good Washington offense and he shut him out. You know, Lundqvist stole three games in the series. Varlamov, he doesn't count yet, but Luongo has played exceptionally well thus far. And, and Cam Ward, you know, got a shutout last night. And I just feel like you're right, Drew. It was kind of symbolic of that transition of, you know, Brodeur is still one of the best, but he's not the best anymore.
Well, and I think one of the issues that Brodeur is having and has had over the past few years at this point is that really his best years, like you were saying, came during the mid-90s through the early 2000s prior to the lockout, when New Jersey had their system in place, and their system was that they executed that neutral zone trap just flawlessly.
Yeah.
And that
you
was.
Think he was a system guy?
I think he's always been a great goalie, and obviously he's on the decline of his career now. But I think that within that system, I think it was so perfectly suited, and that the team was built so well for a span of something like 6 or 7 years there that they could effectively shut down any opposition, no matter how offensively skilled, because they just played so well as a unit. And when you've got that sort of teamwork in front of a guy like Brodeur, you don't have to worry about giving up more than one or at most two goals a game. And I think that team has really been has been reeling since the changes have been implemented and since the games opened up so much more. And I think that Brodeur has been on the rough on the receiving end of that.
I agree with – I mean, I see your point. I think that Brodeur, I think it's just a case in his case of his decline as a player due to age just happened to coincide with a major philosophical / rule shift in the game and the general decline of his team. It's a lot of factors working at once. I mean, he was at. I think that he is bar none the greatest goaltender in the history of the game. I'll take him over any of the early, or I guess modern era, because it's a different position.
Well, I'm looking at something. I'm looking at something that, okay, this is interesting. Just throw this out there that in 96 and 97, Brodeur versus Hasek. 96, mm-hmm. Brodeur or Hasek faces 2,000 or makes 2,000 saves in 97 or yeah 2097 2,198. At the same time period, Brodeur made 1,500 and 1,500.
Oh, wow.
So it's like, I mean, there's something, if you look at these numbers, I just thought those two were the most just sort of like comparable of their era. I think there's something to be said for what Drew's saying in the late 90s. I mean, that's a full quarter of saves that he didn't have to make.
No, and I'm
not
backtracking.
I'm not necessarily on one side or the other. like, I don't have an opinion of him that much outside of this. And so just, I mean, I wasn't expecting it to be this that drastic, to be honest.
That's frankly shocking because I was
not expecting a quarter of the saves to have had to have been made.
That is, that's astounding. I knew he was playing behind a good defense, but that number is.
Well, and I mean,
well done, research department.
Here's what I'll say.
Let's thank Toby the intern for that.
And in 96, it's 2,000 versus 1,500 also.
Yeah.
So three years of that.
Don't get me wrong. Brodeur is and always has been a winner. He is a great goalie. Mm-hmm. But I think that his greatest success came largely as a function of the team around him and the system that team played, because they did just minimize the opponent's offensive chances so dramatically. And I think that that's perfect proof of it right there. And I think that if he was facing the same number of shots as Hasek, I think that he still would have put up very good numbers, but he was just the recipient
I think my conclusion would be he is one of those elite goaltenders like Hasek. If he just played, he's effectively the same quality, and has been his team put him the extra mile.
Yeah, exactly.
I would agree with that. I think I see what you guys are saying. I do think though that most of his loss of recent years is just, you know, age and time and service have caught up with him. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, the Devils, it's that natural cycle for every team that isn't the Red Wings. You know, you get really good for a while and then you kind of wind down, and it's just a combination of those. And then I think that he, you know, you can't do some of the things that the Devils and the Sabres and the Stars and, you know, the teams did in the pre-lockout NHL. And then the one point I was trying to segue into, and we can certainly talk more about Brodeur if you want, but I think that, and it's a shame that it's happening in a smaller market like Carolina, but I think that we're really seeing the emergence of, I think that if Eric Staal played in a big market, he would be in the same conversation as the Crosbys and the Ovechkin, or at least the Datsuks of the world. I think that Eric Staal is a serious, serious talent. I think he does everything well. And then I think in Cam Ward, I think he is going to be one of those goaltenders that is, for whatever reason, he gets the job done. You know, his team lost a big game one in Boston, and so he came out the next night and shut him down.
Yep.
I mean, if you need a rebound game, it's Cam Ward.
Cam Ward has not always instilled a ton of confidence in me, but at the same time, I mean, you have to respect the things that he's able to do in the clutch. And you're absolutely right. When a game is on the line, he always seems to step it up, and
he's a 25-year-old with a Conn Smythe trophy to his credit.
Yeah, that is impossible to argue with. Well,
but I think
given that, we sort of got lost on a tangent there regarding Brodeur. But given Cam Ward's playoff experience, given Eric Staal's continued emergence as one of the dominant centers in the game, do you think that Carolina has a legitimate chance to take this series from Boston? I mean, we talked about the fact last time that Boston really seems like, you know, outside of Detroit, probably the most complete team that's left in the playoffs at this point. Do you think that Carolina could really steal a series?
No, I don't. I think that Carolina will win this series if Jussi Jokinen and Ray Whitney are stars. And yeah. I don't see that as happening. They're excellent complementary players. But I feel like Boston can throw, you know, Mark Savard, Phil Kessel, Milan Lukic. They've got Michael Ryder playing out of his mind right now. David Krejci. They've got Patrice Bergeron. They've got they've just got all the names. They've got a better defense. They've got a better offense. I just feel like Cam Ward and Eric Staal and their supporting cast are going – I think that watching the first two games, I think this is going to be a closer series than people expected. But at the end of the day, I just think there's too much on Boston's bench And I just don't see Carolina as going. I don't think they quite have the firepower to stop them.
I think I agree with you 110% on paper, and I do think that Boston is going to take this series. But I think that what happened last night was really indicative of the problem that Boston has had at points throughout this season. Obviously, they've put together a great record over the course of the season, but they have gone through significant stretches where their offense, which when it's clicking is so phenomenally potent, where their offense just dies completely. Yeah. And they'll go through games at a time where they're not scoring or they're scoring one goal. And when you've got that many threats on the ice, it's very worrisome to see that sort of thing happening, because you have to believe that these guys should be able to put something together every single night of the week. And I don't think that Carolina is the team to beat Boston, but I'm not entirely convinced that Boston is going to be left standing by the time that we get to the Stanley Cup Finals. I
really can see this being one of those series where Boston just barely manages to win, and they kind of – it's one of those Carolina's going to kind of – because I agree, there are some matchup problems. And yeah. I see this as one of those, like, Carolina's going to write the book on how to handle this year's Bruins. And I feel like Washington or Pittsburgh, whomever – and I think it's going to be Pittsburgh. I feel like there's going to be some things you can take away from this series that are going to help Boston's opponent in the next round.
Yeah, I think that that's very definitely true. I think this is going to be a huge test of character for the Bruins, this Canes team. I
still think the Bruins are coming out of the East, though.
Really?
I think that they're going to beat the Kings or the Canes. They'd beat the Kings too, but that would cause all sorts of trouble. But I just think that they have more than everybody else in the playoffs. I think that at the end of the day, Biggs Dinochara is going to do enough beating on Eric Staal every time he touches the puck. And I feel like Boston is so well built. They can just do everything. They can be physical. They can be skillful. Mark Savard is scoring goals. Like I just look at everything that Boston can do. And we've had this conversation before about soccer teams. There are just a certain number of jobs that you need to do to win. And Boston does so many of those jobs with so many different players that I just can't see Boston not having enough firepower to get through this series and probably to get a series beyond it.
Yeah, I think that that's perfectly legitimate. I think that if the Capitals wind up beating the Penguins, which I think that they've got a reasonably realistic shot at, if that happens, then I'm quite certain the Boston's coming out. I don't think the Capitals match up in any way, shape, or form. I think the Penguins are a better matchup against the Bruins, only because I feel like their offensive depth makes them better matched for a shootout against these guys. And if it comes down to that, I guess I shouldn't have any reason to doubt Tim Thomas at this point. I mean, the way he's played the last couple of seasons has been utterly phenomenal, but I'm just still not 100% in his corner. Yeah. And I still don't know if I see him as a Stanley Cup winning goalie. I'd love for him to prove me wrong. I like the way the Bruins play. They're an incredibly exciting team to watch. But I'm just not entirely sold at this point that they're going to make it out of the East. And honestly, if they get to the finals, I have to believe that if they get to the finals, it's going to be against the Red Wings. And if they match up against the Red Wings,
We got to put the Red Wings in the finals, huh?
Well, trust me when I say I do not want the Red Wings in the final, but I just don't see any way around it. Even here's the way I look at it: the Red Wings this season have had to rely on Chris Osgood and Ty Conklin in net,
right?
And they've still been phenomenal.
Wings are phenomenal. They're like Satan; they never die.
Exactly. I'm saying, I mean, these guys, Ty Conklin.
That just made my evening. From now on, I'm calling that team Satan.
Well, you know, I just saw Manchester United on. I thought Red Devils, you know, it all comes together.
No, I agree. And I think that's an excellent segue, Drew. Well done. I mean, you just saw the opening and you managed, and we're just seamlessly talking about Detroit now.
Well, you know, that's the way we operate around these parts.
This is a professional program.
It is.
And obviously heartbreaking loss last night against, Anaheim. And I don't think that, I think that so far the series has been closer. I mean, 2-1 goal games than most people would have expected, even after Anaheim beat San Jose. Cause as we have discussed previously, nobody expects San Jose to do well in the playoffs. They are.
You know, I really wish you hadn't said that, considering I definitely put them as the Stanley Cup winner. I think the last podcast. Yeah. Or is that the podcast that Carl screwed up?
The podcast that has not been, that will
right,
never be.
Right, it's the Phantom podcast.
I mean, then you're totally right. Only a jackass would have put San Jose through that. I mean, only a moron.
Wow.
I think that the funny thing about Detroit is, and it's one of those, like, Osgood is infuriating as somebody that watches sports because – there are so many reasons to rip the guy. He's not, but at the same time, he's 3 cup rings. In 2 of those, he was the starter, and yet he's still lousy. Yep. I don't understand. And it's not just that people don't respect him. It's that he's still a lousy goaltender, but he's won 2 Stanley Cups.
Yep, it's very hard to argue with. Here's something interesting. So far, he really pretty much split the regular season games with Ty Conklin because he was terrible during the regular season.
Oh, yeah. He had
a save percentage of .887, goals against up over 3.
He was practically Turco-esque. I mean, he wasn't quite in that same category.
Yeah, no, I don't think we can lump him in. He's nowhere near Turco bad. Yeah, Turco bad is a whole other level of bad at this point. But Osgood he did not put up the kind of numbers that you need to see from a starting goaltender from Stanley Cup winning team. That said, you're absolutely right. He's won it all on 2 occasions by himself as the main guy, and admittedly always behind great teams, but it's not like he isn't behind a great team now. And so far through 6 games in the playoffs, he has a .928 save percentage, .195 goals against average. His stats are improving tremendously, and he looks like he's stepping it up at the right time. So, you know, I mean, he definitely knows how to perform, and if he's going to get on a hot streak for once this year, this is the time to do it.
So I've heard a lot and seen a lot about how Anaheim is this really good team and they kind of made themselves over midseason. They're going to be tougher than everybody thinks. And I think there's some truth in that. But at the end of the day, I think that you're dreaming if you say that Anaheim walks out of this series. I mean, look at game one. They had Detroit beat. They scored an early goal. And what do they take stupid penalties. That's the book on Anaheim. They did it last year and Dallas killed them. They did it against San Jose, but thanks to San Jose being really, really lousy, they got away. And I mean, and I'm frantically YouTubing it right now, or Googling it right now, and I'm not going to get it in time. But they're going to give the Detroit Red Wings power plays at bad times because that's how they play. That's how Chris Pronger has always played. That's how everybody on that team plays. If your team is down by a goal and you need the other team to high stick somebody and take a penalty, you hope that you're playing the Ducks because they're just going to do it. And I think that what we're just talking about, you've got a goaltender in Osgood that has made a career of being just good enough to win. Well, how do you take pressure off of a goaltender? Take a bunch of penalties. Yep. How do you let a skilled team control the play, limit shots against, get good chances? You take stupid penalties. And I guarantee you with this Detroit team, if you put them on the power play 4 and 5 times a night, you're going to lose the series.
Well, and, you know, but I think just in conjunction with what you're saying, last night they managed to win the game 3 overtimes, and they took a total of 3 penalties throughout the game. If Anaheim can stay disciplined, Anaheim has a surprisingly deep offense. They have a lot of weapons out there. But I agree. I mean, even their best offensive players, you look at a guy like Corey Perry, and Corey Perry is a guy who will get you 80 points a season and 100 pens. And he just does not always make smart decisions. And I think that you're absolutely right. If this team can find a way to stay composed, then I think that they honestly match up perfectly well against the Wings. But based on the way they've played all season, I just don't see that happening. I don't think that they're going to be able to maintain it throughout a 7-game series. I think that they might steal another game if they manage to keep down the infractions. But as it stands right now, I don't think that there's any way for them to pull it all together.
Just as a counterpoint to the 3 penalties and the 3 overtime thriller, they lost game 1 3-2, and they took 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. They took 8 penalties in that game, and they got scored on twice on the power play.
Yep.
And I feel like more often than not, I think that over a 7-game series, you're going to get that Anaheim team 5 times, and you're going to get the 3 penalties in 6 periods of hockey. You're going to get them twice.
Yep, absolutely.
And this Detroit team's just going to carve them open, just cut them up.
Yep. So that said, assuming that Detroit moves on, you've got them going up against either the Canucks or the Blackhawks, both of whom right now have shown that they've got a heck of a lot of offensive capability, but they don't have really much in the way of consistency from night to night. We've seen so far a 5-3 Vancouver win in the first game. We've seen a 6-3 Chicago win in the second game. Do you think, because here's the way I look at it. I assume in a situation like this that ultimately it's going to come down to the goaltender that can steal the games, and I think that that's going to be Roberto Luongo.
Yeah.
I don't think that Vancouver has necessarily as good or as deep a team as Chicago. Chicago's got a young team, but they have tons and tons of talent on that team. But I don't see that there's any way that they're going to be able to put it together against a guy like Luongo enough to take the series. I mean, what are your feelings on this? I know, Carl, you've got maybe a little bit of a bias here.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know like anything about the matchup. I just root for Chicago.
My feeling, Drew, is that when it was 3-0 Vancouver in game 1, I was really worried about how a young Chicago team was going to react. But then Patrick Kane scored twice. They tied it up, and I mean, they lost game 1, but we talk about Mystique and Roberto Luongo stealing a series, but at this point, Chicago has turned a 3-0 lead into a 3-3 game in the third period, and they've turned a 2-goal lead into a game that they ended up winning, game 2, 6-3.
Yep.
And I think that if Chicago doesn't, in both games in the series so far, Chicago has come out sloppy early and cost themselves with penalties. And I feel like if you take that out of game 1, then I think Chicago wins. And
yes,
as much as I want to favor Vancouver, I think the bottom line is that the thing that Chicago really needed was the question was, you know, how are Marty Havlat and how are Patrick Kane, especially Kane, who is a little bit on the small side, how are they going to play? And so far Patrick Kane has been the best player on the ice.
Yeah, that's very true. I know exactly what you're saying about the sloppiness, and I feel like it almost works in the other direction from my perspective. I feel like this team is so young and so relatively inexperienced, especially in the playoffs, that I have difficulty seeing them ironing out those sort of flaws and those sort of lapses in judgment or concentration. I mean, whatever you want to call it.
Here's what I think the X factor is going to be. Jonathan Toews, early against Calgary, he was one of the best players in the league. I was raving about the guy. He just started out like gangbusters, and then all of a sudden his minutes dropped from about 17 minutes a night to 12 minutes a night. And Chicago was swearing up and down that it was the flu, that he was hurt, and there were rumors everywhere about, you know, it might have been the flu, but he couldn't raise one of his arms, and he was, you know, he had a shoulder injury, he was hurt. The last 2 games, Toews has looked healthy.
Yep.
And it was the same thing. One of the games that they lost against Calgary, Patrick Kane missed, and it was the same story. Chicago Chicago was saying, don't worry about it. It's the flu. He's going to be fine. It's the flu. And all these nasty injury rumors came out. And then Patrick Kane, he's obviously playing fine. And I think that this series is going – I feel like Chicago is better across the board position players. I feel like the Sedins are probably the really premier offensive players in that series. But beyond that, I think that when you look at, you know, Dustin Byfuglien, Marty Havlat, Patrick Kane, healthy Jonathan Toews, Sharp, Versteeg, I feel like Chicago has more weapons. I feel like Chicago has a better defense. Brent Seabrook and Duncan Keith might be the best pair in hockey right now. I think that the X factor is if they have a healthy if Jonathan Toews was suffering from the flu, and if he's going to be healthy and a factor for the rest of the series, then I think he is good enough to trump the advantage Roberto Luongo gives them. If Toews is hurt, if Toews isn't going to be able to, you know, to be their captain and to lead the team, then I think that it's going to be a much closer series, because then you're looking at Patrick Kane and a bunch of very good complementary players.
No, I think that that's I think that that's a good point. I mean, they've certainly proven so far that they're not going to be intimidated by Vancouver. They've looks like there were 27 penalties in the last game. 13 for Chicago, 14 for Vancouver. Obviously, Chicago went out and scored 6 goals against a goalie who I think anybody will tell you is one of the best goalies in the league.
Hey, if you can get 6 against Roberto Luongo, you're doing all right.
Absolutely. So it will definitely be interesting. I think this is far and away the most interesting second-round matchup. I think that Chicago makes whichever matchup they're a part of inherently interesting, just because they do have so much depth, and they're still progressing every single game. And if they can put it together for a couple games in a row, I think that they have actually a shot if they go up against the Wings to make it out of the West.
I feel like if Chicago wins this,
The Chicago Detroit conference final would be amazing here.
That would be pretty good.
I think it would be amazing everywhere.
So people would go crazy in Chicago.
Yeah.
Against Detroit, and that's like a huge rival.
Yeah, and they're finally good again. They've been lousy. Detroit has been fattening itself up on a lousy Central Division for, you know, almost a decade, and finally they've got some competition. It'll be great. And I think that if Chicago ends up walking away with this series, and I don't quite think they will yet. I'm not quite there. Give it another game. But I think that if Chicago winds up with this series, I think that it's going to be game one that won the series for them, even though they lost. Because the biggest problem I saw ahead of this series for Chicago was a young, impressionable team coming up against an elite goaltender and getting stuck. And my one concern was that the you know, if Luongo holds on and gets a shutout or lets in a goal and dominates in that first game, then I think that you worry Chicago, and I think that they start pressing and they're much easier to handle. But instead, they came out and they scored 3 goals to tie it up. And at that point, whether it's accurate or not, that Chicago team, there's no way that they're looking at Luongo and thinking anything other than, we've got this guy. If we just keep shooting, if we just keep skating, we've got this guy.
Yep.
And I think for a young, exciting, you know, they hit, they skate, they shoot. I think for a team like Chicago, the fact that they feel like they can win is invaluable.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point.
You know, I mean, it's for a guy like Patrick Kane, who's, you know, this is the first time that these guys have been in the postseason, and everybody's been telling them all along that it's a different game, and it's so difficult, and it's so hard, and it's a different playoffs, and you're going to have to learn, and you're going to have to fail before you can succeed. And then they've heard all this crap about how Roberto Luongo is an elite netminder, and, you know, a couple of years ago, he and Marty Turco traded shutouts for 7 games, and, you know, he's the best goalie in the world, and blah, blah, blah. And what do? They go out and score, they go out and score 3 goals on him to tie a game. They go out and score 6 goals on him and win a game. I mean, there is no mystique anymore. Unless Roberto Luongo needs to come out and slam the door in game 3.
Yep.
Or it's going to be or it's going to be interesting. And he needs to do something to put a little bit of concern into this Blackhawks offense, cuz right now they're just running the crease and shooting at him. They're hitting him and shooting and skating, and they just don't care.
No, they really don't. I think that the physicality that Chicago brings to the game is a function of the fact that they've been told so many times that there's just an expectation that they won't be able to succeed because of their lack of experience and because this team is still growing. But I think that that fearlessness may actually give them a complete edge. I mean, so far they've had a couple of tough matchups now, and they did a great job of dispensing with Calgary. And I think that if they can find a way to keep their offense firing on all cylinders, which it clearly is right now, then they've got every shot of continuing to roll on past Vancouver.
I will say that this far of all of my picks, I felt like I picked Pittsburgh, Boston, Detroit, and Vancouver. Of all of my picks, I feel like I am the least – After two games, I am least confident in this one.
Fair enough.
This is the one, and I'm kind of teetering on the Washington series, and I'm kind of teetering on the Detroit series. I want to give it another game. But of all the series going on, the one that at this point I'm kind of like, ah, crap, I screwed it up. It's this one.
Yeah. Well, it'll definitely be interesting to see how things shape up. But if you did blow that one, it's not going to be a huge change of pace for you. So, I mean, I know. I kid because I love Wes. I kid because
I
love.
I didn't screw that up nearly as badly as you screwed up when you were ripping on the king of goals 2 weeks ago.
When you say king of goals, are you referring by any chance to Liverpool offensive sensation Dirk Kuyt?
I who else is the king of goals?
Well,
there's no other king of goals. he is the lord and master of
the golden haired sun child.
He is the golden haired sun child. He descended from Olympus with a thunderbolt in his right foot and a lightning crash in his left foot, and he scores.
It's impossible to argue with that logic. You know what I think happened? I think that our regular listener must have forwarded our last podcast along to Dirk Kuyt. Because you guys know full well, I've never faulted him for his dedication to the team, for how hard he runs. But in the past two games in the league, Dirk Kuyt has now scored 3 goals and added 1 assist, a nice little cross over to Yossi Benayoun, off to a very offsides, yes, you've been a union.
No, he was not offside.
He was behind the ball.
No one ever talked about that in the highlights. He was behind the ball. And when you're behind the ball, you're onside.
I'm not entirely convinced.
I was watching on the highlight show, and they were talking about that, and I was like, I think he was behind the ball. And I rewound and watched and he was behind the ball. He was onside, no question.
All right. I'm not entirely convinced, but I'll take it. Regardless, I'm not complaining. But Dirk Kuyt,
I just want to make one statement, and I'm going to challenge you, Drew.
Yes.
Because Liverpool has a match coming up this weekend, correct?
Yes.
I want you to assure our regular listener that if the king of goals has a goal or an assist, that our next week's podcast will begin with a personal prepared apology from you to the king of goals for ever doubting his reign over all that is goals.
I can absolutely guarantee that if Dirk Kuyt scores again this weekend, I will pour my heart out. I will apologize. I will bow at his feet and kiss the lightning bolt and the thunder crack. Wait, that just doesn't sound right.
No,
no, it's lightning bolt and thunder crack.
Okay.
I mean, it's written in like Swedish or wherever he's from originally.
Right,
but that's
right, exactly. It probably has different implication there. Anyways, I will absolutely guarantee that there will be a prepared statement ready. And you know me, I'm a humble guy. If I've got to eat crow, I'm more than happy to do it.
As long as it's right off of Thundercrack.
Right, exactly. Nicely fried by the Thundercrack.
Nice. Yeah, unfortunately, there's not a lot going on in the EPL. Really.
No, there's not. But I actually, since we're talking about Liverpool anyways, the one thing that I kind of am interested in chatting about just for a second is Liverpool's opposition this past weekend. they beat Newcastle 3-0, but it's generally considered they had 31 shots, 11 or 12 on target, but they easily could have scored a couple more goals against this Newcastle side. And Newcastle obviously has been reeling all season, but they brought in Alan Shearer after Joe Kinnear had sort of righted the ship, then all of a sudden he has his heart attack. They bring in Alan Shearer, who effectively, because he has no managerial experience whatsoever, says, I'm going to make Ian Dowie my assistant.
I think about it, that if I was Newcastle's management and they were talking to him and to Shearer, and Shearer's like, all right, Ian Dowie, I'm bringing him on. That would have been right there, negotiations over. If you want Ian Dowie, you are obviously an idiot. So you goodbye.
Well, I think most rational people would think that way, but this is the Newcastle management that we're talking about, Carl. rationality.
You know, I have a theory about this whole Shearer appointment.
Go ahead, and then I will.
No, it's because my theory is a little bit out there. I feel like Shearer was an acknowledgement that they were going to get relegated, and here's what I'm talking about. So the biggest problem with relegation, right, is all of a sudden you're not qualified for the, you know, Premiership TV package, the, you know, $3 billion TV rights package. You don't get a cut of that anymore.
Right.
And so I feel like Newcastle is lousy. They're horrible, and they combine being horrible with being hurt, so the regular horrible players they have are all injured. And so instead of having those horrible players, they have even more horrible players that are coming off the bench. And just they're just lousy, you know? They're just horrible. And so they're going down. They know they're going down. They know that the money's going to dry up, and they've got idiotic signings like Michael Owen and Nicky Butt and all these guys, Joey Barton. They've got all these guys owed tons and tons and tons of money. And they're just stupidity, just rampant, just rampant. And so they're desperate to grab as much money as they can. Sweary Joe Kinnear goes down with a heart attack. They've got this like 12-game window at the end of the season. So we're going to bring in Alan Shearer just so that it ramps up the season. You know, a couple more people buy tickets, a couple more people buy jerseys. You know, they don't even really care what Shearer is going to do. It just makes them relevant for like another 3 weeks, which is all they need to collapse and fail and end the season as pitiful, relegated, stupidity, rampant team. And they make just a little bit more money, and it's just a little bit – it cushions the blow.
That's a very good point. That's a good point. I think it's so funny though that it's like Joe Kinnear now represented like some sort of hope and stability, and like being in. I connect being in the Premiership with Joe Kinnear now for Newcastle, because I honestly feel like they were on pace to kind of stay above relegation until he got his heart attack.
Yep. I agree.
Yep, absolutely.
But can't you just see him, like, his heart attack came in the middle of practice, and somebody wasn't running hard enough, and so he just started screaming curse words for 20 minutes, and then he just passed.
That's just like a kid movie. Just like in Mighty Ducks when Gordon Bombay asks, what happened to your old coach? He was yelling at us, and then his arm.
He hurt his arm. Sweary Joe hurt his arm.
And Alan Shearer is no Gordon Bombay.
No, he's not, really. You know, and I because feel like Stephen Harper is notably the Cat Gaffney.
Well, Gordon Bombay didn't ask for help from his idiot college buddy or some ugliest dude he finds on the street.
Yep.
You know, he just Gordon Bombay did it himself with his driver.
Yeah, he did. But he had more talent around him. I mean, tell me who in the Newcastle squad brings the same level of skill that Guy and the Oreo line brought.
Well, show me Alan Shearer hunting the streets of Newcastle looking for a dude who could kick the ball so hard it would break his car's window. For the local talent.
Who's the Aberman on that squad? You know, they need a guy that's doing play-by-play from the field and not really contributing other than that, and he's kind of Jewish. They need that guy.
I feel like Carl's right. They need the inner-city kid with the knuckle puck, or whatever the soccer equivalent of the knuckle puck is. Without the knuckle puck, there's no way to win. I mean,
that's true. It wasn't Aaron Grant.
They do have Peter Lovenkrantz. I don't know what that means, but they have him. He's there. No, he's hurt, actually. I think he's hurt.
He is injured right now. No, he played the last game. He started over Owen. Yeah, he started over Owen against Newcastle.
He played in a formation that
started against Newcastle?
Or against, sorry, against Liverpool.
Yeah, in these days, playing for Newcastle is really playing against them.
<That's true>.
Yes.
I'm going to say this. I'm going to start work on, and if Newcastle gets if Newcastle gets relegated, I'm going to promise our listener that we'll do a short one-act play entitled "The Signing of Alan Shearer / Newcastle Gets Relegated," and we're gonna have roles and there'll be a setting and it's going to be great.
Can I play Joe Kinnear and get to call
you
somebody?
You can play Joe Kinnear and the King of Goals, Dirk Kuyt.
Yes. Awesome.
Well, I figure all of us are going to need to be playing different. Back to Newcastle. Oh, Nick should play every single one.
Yeah, he should.
For the accent.
We'll see about that.
He does have the accent.
Nick needs to play.
Except
Nick
for Sweary Joe
Kinnear.
I think Drew has earned the right to be Sweary Joe.
Nick
yes!
Needs to do it on all the others.
Sweary Joe hurt his arm and Newcastle got relegated. You know what would be perfect, though? If on the last day of the season, Hull got the mumps and had to go down.
Yeah.
That's how the Ducks made the playoffs. The Panthers got the mumps.
You're right.
That's how Tottenham missed out on fourth place.
Right. And hey, since we've derailed, I really have to point something out to you guys. So the Washington Capitals, right? They've got a dance team called the Red Rockers, right?
Yeah.
And I'm gonna rattle off some names, and I want you to tell me who you think the hottest of the Red Rockers are. Okay.
Yeah.
So we've got. I'm gonna name five names, and I just want you to react. Okay. Just let me get through all five, and then I want you to react. So we've got Ashley. We've got Heather. We've got Laura. We've got Kristen with a T, and then we've got David.
Whoa. I'm gonna, boy, that's a really tough one.
Yeah. Yeah, David the Red Rocker.
I mean, wow.
And if you look at, I'm looking at the roster page for the Red Rockers right now, and he's punchable. I mean, this guy, he is, wow. He is on a professional ice hockey team's dance squad. He is.
I mean, he's living the dream, Wes. I don't think you can knock this guy. He's achieved everything that he wanted to in his life.
Speaking of derailment, I was thinking about something the other day that I was watching a WPS match for about 5 minutes the other day, which kind of made me think about this even more. That women have infiltrated the NBA to quite an incredible degree, to the point where
really? They
are in the announcing team in playoff games, or
yeah, Cheryl
refereeing,
Miller, right?
Refereeing playoff games. I saw that and I was astonished. A woman reffing a professional male sports playoff game.
Hey. Listen, a woman is just as qualified to make bad calls and poor decisions in an NBA game.
No, you're right, but I just couldn't imagine like a woman umpiring. A woman.
If anything, and I think that we actually had this talk the other day, Mr. Carl, if anything, I think that it's a step backwards for women's rights that a woman would be associated with the quality of refereeing that comes out of the NBA.
Oh, yes, you're right. We did talk about that.
It's almost like I feel like the fact that she had to come out and the fact that a woman is reffing an NBA game instead of just dudes kind of indicts women. It's like, no, they're actually crap too. They're just as awful and just as stupid and just as terrible as the men are.
It's like the opposite of feminism.
And then also, how long do you think the WPS has until it's gone?
How long is it? I think they're going to get through the first season because they probably have sponsorship agreements.
I mean, it seems like the beginning of the recession is a terrible time to start a league.
Hey, Carl, I just want to throw this out there. I'm reading a USA Today article from 2005, at which point Violet Palmer, presumably the ref in question, had already been an NBA ref for 9 seasons. So now she's been an NBA ref for something like 13 seasons.
That's remarkable.
That is really remarkable.
Maybe you just haven't watched that much basketball until.
Well, I mean, I think that's obvious.
How many games she fixed? What's her ratio?
It doesn't list here. This was 2005, so it was kind of pre fix.
I'd probably prefer an all women officiating crew if I was to, you know, hope for honesty and whatnot. Not rigging the gear. Not, you know, I don't know. Maybe not.
Women are better. They don't gamble as
much. We're at like 54th minute, so no one's listening by now anyway.
Right, exactly.
David the Red Rocker and women referees.
Yeah,
that's
our bonus topics. The end of this, speaking English.
You got to look at this guy. He's just like, what's up?
I mentioned it, and I will.
Nothing's up. Nothing is up, David the Red Rocker. You're not. Nothing is going on. Nobody wants to have a beer.
Oh, we got time for a quick Champions League second leg preview.
Okay.
Whoa.
Bonus time.
Man U advances and Chelsea advance.
Agreed.
I think that's
Carl said
sums
quick.
It up.
I gave you quick.
Wait, sorry. I missed the whole thing. Wow, that was quick.
I mean,
way to go, guys.
You said Man U wins, Chelsea wins, and I said agreed. And,
yeah, no, I think that's perfectly legit. I think it's going to be interesting. Chelsea kind of parked the bus a little bit the other day. I think it'll be interesting to see if they can actually manage to play soccer. But, you know, if they do, more power to them. They're going to take
it. That was really long.
Oh, yeah. Shit. Sorry. I kind of fucked that up.
Yep.
That wasn't short at all, you D-bag.
Shit! Yep. All right. Let's cut that part.
Nope.
Just for that, you're going to have to join David on the Red Rockers dance team.
No! Dude, his favorite movie is The Matrix, and his favorite food is cheesesteaks.
Cheesesteaks.
Yes. Cheesesteaks. And he's also a software trainer in his spare time.
Wow. A software trainer?
That's what it says.
If you're on a dessert, what is a Bear Grylls?
Have you ever seen Man vs. Wild?
Oh, that guy. So if he was on a deserted island and he could have one person with him, he'd pick a dude.
Yeah, dude, come on.
He'd pick a dude.
He's on the Red Rockers. Of course he would pick a dude.
He's on the Red Rockers. Hey, one of his hobbies is rock concerts.
Yeah, no. Uh-uh. Fail.
Oh, man.
Do you think we've wrapped up yet another glorious Speaking English podcast?
I think we might have.
Red Rock, I'm looking at Dave's photo gallery.
Until we get an official sign-off, I'm just letting it roll.
Let's consider this.
This slideshow is fantastic.
Good God, there's a slideshow, too? All right.
He's wearing a jersey.
We have to go before the thing overwhelms the podcast.
I can't take any more David right now.
All right. David the Red Rocker. He's got hockey gloves on now. He's mugging at the camera.
Oh, shit. Okay. It's too much for me. He's too awesome.
That's right. He is the official sponsor. Oh, he dropped a helmet. Oh, dear. He's so zany. He's throwing a helmet up in the air.
I like this running commentary that you're giving, Wes. But
we should make people pay for this.
Handle it.
That's why people pay good money for this podcast.
They should. We should charge for it. Ricky Gervais. That's all.
99 cents a pop. We could make 99 cents a week. But actually, maybe every couple of weeks. We don't get them up quite that often.
This one will be up tonight. I promise. In 2 hours, it'll be up.
Excellent.
All right. Well, then that's all I got, gentlemen.
All right. Bye.
Well, I'm tired of talking about Dave the Red Rocker.
I'm tired of you talking about Dave the Red Rocker.
I hope you listened this
night, one and all. We'll be back after Champions League.
That's right.
And the race.
Right. There's a race, too. Exciting times.
Exciting.
Exciting indeed.
Good night.
Night.
Bye-bye, homos.